Today's episode of The Audible is brought to you by Trader Joe's, where the crew is on your team. Grab your shopping cart, make a quick snap, and move out of the pocket. Run an option to the demo station. Make an end around to the snacks, then find an eligible receiver to take you to the end zone. Learn more at TraderJoe's.com and at Trader Joe's on Instagram. Welcome to The Audible. I'm Stuart Mandel, joined by Bruce Feldman. It is the Monday morning after one of the most eventful weekends I can recall in college football on the field, and probably more notably off the field. We do want to get into all the playoff talk, all the playoff scenarios as we're into our last week here, but I think, Bruce, we got to start with the insanity, the craziness, the just unprecedented event we watched unfold Sunday in Tennessee.
Yeah, Stu. I mean, it was just, as you said, I mean, things got wild on Saturday, but Sunday, it was just kind of surreal to sit back and watch it from a whole lot of different levels. And, you know, I was thinking going, well, someday Brian Curtis, you know, who's a media writer, is probably going to have a really, really juicy story to kind of put the pieces back together on how this thing blew up from social media firestorm. And, you know, I don't know. I was on the phone kind of constantly, what felt like for 24 hours straight yesterday with a bunch of stuff. But the Tennessee things to me turned. I had gotten a call from somebody more towards, I want to say, middle of the afternoon my time. And this was after it had already become, you know, there was the picture that everyone saw of Tennessee folks painting, you know, the big rock there in Knoxville about just how little they wanted to do with Greg Schiano. And this person said, heads up, they're talking exit strategy. You should start looking into it. And then I spoke to another source that has been pretty strong on this stuff all week. And he said to me, he said, there's been something signed and the deal is dead. They're getting out of it. And I was like, how can they do this? He was like, they had planned an announcement that was supposed to come, I think, within the next 24 hours. And he said, they are scrambling. It is a complete firestorm. And it's just, you know, and I had a pretty, you know, I used the quote from this person in my story. And it just, within 10 minutes, I started looking on, you know, the people I follow. And I was like, man, this thing is going to, you know, their heads are spinning right now. It's crazy.
The whole thing was unbelievable. And to be clear, I'm not saying that Greg Schiano would walk into Tennessee and lead them back to the glory days of Peyton Manning. It's no guarantee. But I think you and I both know just how remarkable that turnaround was at Rutgers. And that's kind of my frame of reference with him. But I guess for Tennessee fans, at least the ones that objected to this hire so strenuously, they maybe didn't know anything about what happened at Rutgers, or they don't care what happened at Rutgers because it's not the SEC, and they more recently remember the failed stint at Tampa Bay. Now, Tennessee fans will tell you it had nothing to do with that, and it was all about this obscure reference in a deposition in an insurance case by Mike McQuarrie that he had heard from Tom Bradley that once upon a time, Greg Schiano saw Jerry Sandusky in the act, if you will, and didn't do anything about it. Do you remember when we were this? I got to be honest, when this first started happening on Twitter, this vitriol about it, I had to really rack my brain. I was like, I think I remember something about that. It actually
was
broke.
At SEC Media.
Yeah, we were at SEC Media Days and that broke. And of course, you you see the headline and you're just like, triple take. Oh my gosh, this is starting up all over again. But then the more you looked into it, you know, well, this is a very flimsy allegation that nobody's ever going to be able to corroborate, and I don't think this is really going to go anywhere. And I had just
I think Urban Meyer and Ohio State and Schiano had a statement that they came out and it kind of, like, I don't want to say dissipated to some degree, and people moved on. You know, I'll be honest, you know, not to see things through the prism of Ohio State media a little bit, but But I did a coaching carousel preview story, which I did a lot of reporting going into it. And it went up Wednesday, which is the day before Thanksgiving. And in there, I had put that, you know, I always heard that it was a very real possibility Greg Schiano could get the Tennessee job. And you're always curious, like, you know, we do this on the Audible sometimes, wondering what we say could get aggregated somewhere, right? And sometimes some of that stuff has happened with our podcast. In that case, I saw 11 Warriors, the, you know, the Ohio State site talked about, you know, I saw they had done a post on it about Schiano and possibly getting the Tennessee job and that. And so I was like, you know, I didn't think anything of it other than, wow, these fans who thought they were getting, and I've had this conversation with, you know, a lot of people, including some Tennessee fans I know, all these John Gruden mania. What's going to happen if you end up with Greg Schiano? Because that had been a very real possibility for a while. But then just to see, I think there was such disbelief. Oh, my God, not only are you getting Gruden, because I really think that's what it comes back to.
Well, you know? not just Gruden, but also Dan Mullen goes out of the pit. You know, Florida ends up getting Dan Mullen. They thought maybe that would be the Tennessee coach, assuming Gruden wasn't going to be in the
fallback.
Picture,
yeah.
The fallback. I believe George Schroeder reported last week that they had approached Chip Kelly initially. He wasn't interested. You know, all the big time names are falling out of the picture. And I guess they looked at Greg Schiano as a big step down from that.
Okay, Stu, we'll get back to the podcast in a second. But this was obviously a crazy weekend. I feel like I got about an hour and a half of sleep in my hotel. But one thing I'm looking forward to is I got a pretty comfortable bed at home now. And as our listeners know, few things are more important to someone's health and sanity than a good night's sleep, right?
That's right. And I agree with you. After a long week on the road, I'm happy to be back sleeping on my Leesa mattress. Go to leesa.com. That's L-E-E-S-A. Leesa.com/audible and get $100 off a new mattress. Bruce, as you know, Leesa is an innovative, direct-to-consumer online mattress brand that is also socially conscious. They're driven by the mission to provide a better place to sleep for everybody. Leesa donates one mattress to a shelter for every 10 they sell through their 110 program. Over 22,000 mattresses donated so far. So again, go to leesa.com/audible to get $100 off a Leesa mattress. That's leesa.com/audible. I mean, the question is, how much do you believe that this was about, we don't want anything to do with a guy who might have had something to do with covering up child abuse at Penn State, or how much of it was, this guy's not good enough for Tennessee, and somebody somewhere latches onto that story and it catches fire? Because, look, you could have the biggest outcry in the world that this guy's not a good enough coach. I don't think that's going to force John Curry to break a contract. But when they paint the rock on campus to say Schiano covered up child rape at Penn State, there's just no getting over that. At that point is when I tweeted, both sides need to walk away. This is too toxic. You're never going to be able to come back from this. And clearly they came to that. Tennessee at least came to that conclusion, but they came to it much later in the process than you would have wanted to. So whether you feel this reaction was warranted, and I certainly don't think it was, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that it's, frankly, we see this a lot now in our country. It doesn't matter if you're accurate or right. It just matters if you're loud and vocal enough, and they were, and they successfully ran this guy off. The after effect to think about is just stunning, including most notably for John Curry.
Yeah, I mean, as we're taping this, it's Monday morning. About an hour ago, I was on the phone with a really plugged in Tennessee source who told me there is a lot of pressure from big money boosters and powerful politicians there trying to mobilize to force John Curry out as the AED. It's gotten that nasty for Curry, and this person had told me it's such a hot mess. Just when you think they've gotten out of the ditch, they've fallen into a much bigger one, end quote. By the way, so Michael McCann, who used to work with and who I work with, who's a legal expert for SI, he tweeted after my tweet to me, John Curry would be a key witness if Greg Schiano sues Tennessee. It would likely be better for UT if Curry is employed by UT in the event Schiano sues. Curry could have much to tell and share. If UT fires Curry, the school better negotiate a non-disclosure agreement with him. Yeah, because
that all sounds perfectly reasonable, but reasonable is not the word of the day in Knoxville right now.
Yeah, let me run something by you. I'm curious what your take on this. So Chris Brown, not that Chris Brown, Chris Brown of Smart Football fame, who is also a lawyer, he had tweeted out something I saw on Monday morning saying, you know, Tennessee folks basically, I forgot what the word he used, is kind of running Greg Schiano out. How would they feel if UT tried to hire Lane Kiffin, who has Kendall Bryle as his offensive coordinator, given his Baylor ties? And I really hadn't thought of that possibility. Now, I don't know. Could they actually hire Lane Kiffin in the wake of all this? Who knows? But so I asked somebody else I know there, and just, you know, the reaction was, I can't imagine they could have Kendall Bryles welcome there because, you know, you still have a Title IX lawsuit swirling around from 2016.
But just because you hire Lane Kiffin doesn't mean Kendall Bryles is coming with him.
Doesn't, but keep in mind that, you know, a top five offense. I mean, it doesn't mean he's not, you know, it doesn't mean he's coming with him. It doesn't mean he wouldn't, but I'm just saying that would there be a backlash to Lane Kiffin given his connection to Kendall Bryles, given Kendall Bryles' connection to Baylor?
Of course not.
Again.
Of course not, because they would think Lane Kiffin's a good, and by the way, what does that say about where we've come in the state of Tennessee? They rioted practically when he left the first time. He was the single biggest arch enemy of Tennessee football for years. And I think given recent events, and given, of course, the success Lane has had at both Alabama and FAU, there's a segment of that fan base, I don't know how big a segment, that would welcome him back with open arms today.
All right, Stu, we've hashed around a lot of Tennessee craziness on the coaching carousel. We can revisit that in a second, but I think we should deep dive into what we were expecting to talk a lot more about today, which is the possibilities of the playoff and everything that's going on with that. And I think we should start in the SEC, not Tennessee related, but you went to the Auburn-Alabama game, and what the heck do we make of how things are unfolding now with the playoff, with a lot of stuff on the line this weekend?
Well, okay, first of all, can I just say the Iron Bowl lived up to everything I hoped it would be. It was one of the best atmospheres I've ever experienced. It was, you know, you expect the stadium to be loud when your team's on defense, but where you really noticed it was when Auburn would have a big play on offense. Just the magnitude of the roar through the stadium was just unbelievable. It was also obviously surreal. I've covered a whole lot of Alabama games under Nick Saban. They all follow a familiar script. First of all, they win. And second of all, whether they win decisively or not, one thing you usually count on with Alabama is they play a very clean football. Not a lot of penalties, not a lot of missed tackles, if any. And it was just by the end, it was just a meltdown when they had the consecutive botched snaps and the silent count. Auburn was the better team. If Jarrett Stidham doesn't fumble his own snap near the goal line when they were about to go up 14-0, it probably would have been a blowout earlier in the game. You had some pretty, you were doing the Washington State game sideline reporter, and you had a pretty strong comment about Alabama in the playoff picture.
Yeah, so we had a lot of fill time in our game because it was such a blowout, and we got into talking about the playoff and a bunch of coaching search stuff. My thing with Alabama is, you know, and obviously I respect the program, and it's been awesome what Nick Saban's done. I think he's the best coach, not just in my lifetime in college football, but in the history of the sport. I'm going to start with that. But I don't think they have much of a case. You know, I have them number 5 right now in my top 10. Problem is, they're not going to play another game, and two teams behind them have a chance, I think, if they win their conference title games, to leapfrog them. And, you know, listen, you've told me a lot that the committee values who you beat. Well, right now, if you look at Alabama's resume, their best win is over 9-3 LSU. after that, I mean, what also hurt them beyond them, just them losing this weekend, was also that what had been their best win was Mississippi State. And Mississippi State lost to like a two-touchdown underdog at home to Ole Miss. And you can say, well, yeah, they lost their starting quarterback. I need to remind you, Ole Miss was playing without Shea Patterson too. And so right now, what does Alabama have to hang their hat on? I would feel differently if Alabama lost a game, but at least it was in the SEC title game. So at least you could say, well, they beat Auburn and they got LSU. Mm-hmm. Because all this talk about, well, they beat Florida State, and we all thought Florida State was going to be really good, but then their quarterback got hurt.
That's baloney.
Yeah.
Then you should give Wisconsin credit for beating BYU because they're usually pretty good.
Yeah, look, I mean, Wisconsin beating Northwestern is probably as good right now, or close to as good as the win over LSU. They're both 9-3 teams, and Wisconsin's going to play a very talented Ohio State team, and they don't have a loss, and that's the big thing for me. So, you know, I guess the question, you know, would be a two-loss Ohio State team that wins a conference title game that would have a win over Wisconsin, a blowout win against Michigan State, you know, win over Michigan. Would you put them in over an 11-1 Alabama team that doesn't have any great wins and didn't win their title? I mean, is that what it comes down to? I assume the big argument potentially could be if Ohio State beats and doesn't blow out Wisconsin, so you'd have a 11-1 Ohio State team with a bad loss.
11-2 Ohio State team.
Yeah, sorry. 11-2 Ohio State team with a bad loss to Wisconsin, to a bad loss at Iowa, and a convincing loss at home to Oklahoma. But they would have blown out Michigan State, which is a pretty good team, beaten Michigan on the road, have a really good win over an undefeated Wisconsin team, and also, you know, beat Penn State. I mean, to me, that's going to – and they don't have – They have a conference title game, whereas Alabama just doesn't have that. I mean, what else potentially needs to happen for Alabama to have a real chance beyond people just going, well, it's Nick Saban's team and they're always here, and Vegas would favor them if that happened, because Vegas favored them over Ohio State a few years ago, and obviously that didn't work out so great when they played in the Sugar Bowl.
Funny you should say that. What would have to play out? My forward pass column on the All American on Monday morning laid out 19 different playoff scenarios that I could come up with. Alabama only shows up in 7 of them. But it's hard to, and by the way, as always, you can go to theathletic.com/theaudible and get 25% off a subscription to the All-American with a free 7-day trial. It's hard to say they're completely out of it. I mean, I agree, they don't have a playoff resume. They just don't. Every playoff team to this point had at least three top 25 wins, all but one had a conference championship. Alabama doesn't have either of those things. But they didn't have those things last week either, and they were the number one team because they were undefeated and because they were Alabama. And maybe you could say, well, they're Alabama and they passed the eye test, but as I wrote from the game Saturday, you can no longer say that. They passed the eye test when they were beating up on Tennessee and Arkansas and Ole Miss. Once they started playing better teams, I think it became pretty evident that they're a good team. They're not Alabama of the past few years. But again, hard to say they're completely out of it. Bruce, back to the podcast in a second, but I want to ask you, how is your Mac Weldon underwear treating you these days?
Pretty damn good, Stu. Cushy socks and soft underwear, man, it just makes a guy feel great as he goes through the course of a day, whether you're traveling on a plane or just like sitting in the car for a long car ride, right? I mean, very underrated for a guy's well-being.
Yes, Mac Weldon's the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, and sweatpants that you will ever wear. They have a line of silver underwear and shirts that are naturally antimicrobial, which means they eliminate odor. They want you to be comfortable, so if you don't like your first pair, you can keep it, and they will still refund you, no questions asked. I don't think you're going to want that refund based on my shopping experience. But go to MacWeldon.com and get 20% off using promo code Audible. Not only does Mac Weldon's underwear, socks, and shirts look good, they perform well too. They're good for working out, going to work, going out on dates, just everyday life. So go to macweldon.com/audible. Get that 20% off, macweldon.com/audible. The way this plays itself out very cleanly, and we have no playoff controversy, is either team that wins the ACC game, either team that wins the SEC game is going to be 2. Oklahoma wins, that's 3. Wisconsin wins, that's 4. End of debate. The issue, obviously, is what happens if Ohio State beats Wisconsin. And that is where you get in.
Our game on Big Fox is TCU-Oklahoma. What happens if TCU beats Oklahoma?
Okay, so that's an interesting one, too. Let me just say one thing before I get to that. Ohio State versus, if it did come down to Ohio State versus Alabama, it would be the least satisfying debate in the history of debates because most people don't want either of those teams in the playoff. They're both extremely flawed. But given what the committee has said over and over again about the importance of big wins, I got to think they would go with the team that just beat a 12-0 Wisconsin team, that beat a 10-2 Penn State team, that blew out a 9-3 Michigan State team. You know, they would have big wins, which Alabama would not, unless they say, well, that Iowa game's just a deal breaker. To your point about TCU beating Oklahoma, okay, I hadn't really thought about this till I sat down to write the column. Is Oklahoma in either way? I mean, okay, TCU beats Oklahoma and TCU's the Big 12 champ. Well, they still have the same record. The two of them still have the same record. They split a pair of meetings and they both beat Oklahoma State. But after that, TCU doesn't really have another notable win, whereas Oklahoma won at Ohio State. I think they would stay above them and possibly just stay in the playoff.
Yeah, I thought about that too, just because not only did they beat Ohio State, they beat them in Columbus. It actually wasn't that close. I mean, I would think it'd be one thing if Ohio State, we were talking about a one-loss Ohio State team, but not a two-loss Ohio State team. So I think, you know, I have Oklahoma my number one team right now, and I think they, you know, it'd be different if they got, you know, beaten, you know, 31-7. But if it's a close game, I think they have probably a decent argument to get in the playoff.
So again, two spots I'm saying are just winners in ACC, SEC. If Oklahoma loses to TCU, Wisconsin beats Ohio State, Wisconsin's the third team. Now, are you going to take 11-2 Oklahoma, or are you going to take 11-1 Alabama?
Again, I go back to it. Oklahoma has 3 better wins than anything Alabama has.
Right. I think the only way the committee could justify it, and I don't think people would like it, is if they – I mean, the committee has been pretty harsh on Oklahoma to this point. They've been very skeptical of their defense. And I could see them saying, well, Alabama just has a much better defense. And
are they skeptical of Baker Mayfield? Because I would take him over any quarterback in the country, and it's not even close now.
And you know what? I had the same concerns early in the season. But as it goes on, I mean, look, some of the other teams we're talking about here, Clemson, I don't put Miami in the same breath, especially after losing to Pitt. But Clemson, Georgia, certainly. Auburn's defense is unbelievable. A lot of these teams have great defenses, and Oklahoma does not. But none of those teams have Baker Mayfield. And the deeper we get into this, here's an interesting question that Pat Forty threw out to me the other night. We were driving back from the game. Without each of the last 3 years, I mean, Alabama only won the playoff once, but in each of those years, they went in as the consensus favorite, right? Everybody thought Alabama was going to win the playoff. If they're out of it, who's the favorite? Who would be the team that people would say, yeah, that's the team that's going to win the playoff? I don't think there is one.
No, I agree. I think it's different. There is nothing that you look at and go, okay, I think this is a dominant team. It just doesn't feel like that year. Everybody is really, really flawed.
Why do you think we don't feel that way about defending national champion Clemson? Is it because they lost to Syracuse?
Because they lost to Syracuse, and it's not like they lost to a good Syracuse team. They lost to a bad Syracuse team.
You're not at this point of the committee's opinion that was just a complete aberration where Kelly Bryant got hurt and they haven't played a game like that since before. They didn't play. They never looked anything like that before, and they haven't looked anything like that since. They you know, obviously handled South Carolina pretty easily the other night. They play really good defense. I think they're really good. I just have a hard time I still, and maybe I shouldn't, have a hard time accepting that this is still Deshaun Watson level Clemson. But if they beat Miami, a really good Miami team, they're going to go into the playoff with the same record they did last year.
Yeah, look, and I'm sure, you know, a lot of people should pick them, predict them to win it all then. But I don't
Clemson, by the way, is another team I should mention that if Miami beats them, is there a scenario where they still get in? Because we know the committee loves their resume. They beat Auburn. They beat Virginia Tech. They actually have, I'm assuming Florida State gets to 500 this week against Louisiana Monroe. So even if Clemson doesn't beat Miami, they would have 8 wins over 500 or better opponents. No other team will top that. I mean, what about that? What if it's between 11-2 Clemson doesn't win the ACC against 11-2 Ohio State that wins the Big Ten?
I would lean towards a team that wins the conference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess we need to see how both teams look on Saturday.
I think where Ohio State would be okay there is because now the Iowa loss is kind of moot because Clemson has their own terrible loss.
By the way, yeah, you know what, I would agree because I was about to say something, then I kind of walked it back. I was about to say, well, Iowa's a much better team than I think in Syracuse, but Iowa blew out Ohio State. It wasn't like even without Kelly Bryant. I mean, it was still a down-to-the-wire game. And one was a road loss, one was a home loss, so I don't want to drip too much into that.
All in all, I think this whole conversation is making me realize that this is just kind of a watered-down pool of teams this year. Now, Auburn, the way it's playing right now, I mean, if they go ahead and they beat Georgia again, especially soundly, they probably would be that team that everybody's picking, even though they would be the first two-loss playoff team. Because right now, they are playing so well on both sides of the ball. But they do have the two losses. They blew the lead against 20-point lead against LSU. This is not a great pool of candidates. And, you know, I like to read Bill Connolly's efficiency rankings. And it's an interesting point he made Sunday. Ohio State is number one in his efficiency rankings, probably because they blow out so many teams. But the score that they have, the rating, at this same point last year, they would have been eighth. So that kind of tells you how less impressive this pool of teams at the top is than it was a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's all crazy. It just is. And speaking of crazy, and the coaching carousel heated up, and obviously we talked about Tennessee. What surprised you the most beyond Tennessee of things that happened this weekend?
Surprised me the most? There were just so many strange moments.
We knew he was going to get fired.
We knew Brett Bielema was get fired. I didn't know if he'd get fired as soon as he walked off the field. So I'll tell you what was most surprising. Not that Arizona State fired Todd Graham. We think we all knew that was a strong possibility all year long.
But the press conference from Ray Anderson, the AD. That was surprising.
That was bizarre. That was bizarre where he said they're going to try to win Pac-12 championships, but they're not going to pay very well, and they want the new coach to keep the two coordinators. Good luck with that. But no, more surprising to me. Now look, I don't have the pulse of every fan base in America by any means. So I guess I just was, you know, it snuck up on me. ASU did end up having a pretty, they had two non-conference losses, including to San Diego State. But then they ended up going 6-3 in the Pac-12. They beat Washington. They beat their rival at the end of the year. Unbeknownst to me, ASU fans are back on the Todd Graham bandwagon and are actually ticked at Ray Anderson for firing him. And when I suggested that, you know, that could be where Kevin Sumlin lands, they weren't happy about that either. They don't think he's an upgrade from Todd Graham. And so the biggest surprise of the weekend, other than the Tennessee thing, is that who knew ASU fans were back in love with Todd Graham?
Well, I think one of the things, and, you know, this is something I'd reported on Saturday, people had assumed, oh, Kevin Sumlin was going to a foregone conclusion to ASU. Remember, Kevin Sumlin turned down that job 6 years ago. I'm not sure how much the president, from what I heard, was thrilled, you know, feels too good about that. So, you know, could he end up there? Maybe. But I think there's going to be, you know, because of that press conference was so awkward, you know, it's just a very, very weird situation. And I caution weird just because we've seen Tennessee is like taking it to another level. But yeah, that, and it's, I think that's a good job. You have a really good recruiting base there, new facilities or upgraded facilities. So I am told, Stu, that the Nebraska stuff that Lars Anderson had reported a week ago, the Bleacher Report writer, who's a Nebraska guy, $35 million for 7 years for Scott Frost. There is definitely something to that. Now, has Scott Frost accepted it? No, because he still has another week left at UCF. But everything is trending towards him being the next coach at Nebraska. Home run hire?
Yeah, I mean, it's a home run hire, and it kind of just worked out perfectly for them. When UCF won the thrilling game the other day against USF and advanced to the conference title game, that put Florida in a situation where they felt like they couldn't wait a week, not knowing whether he's actually going to pick their job or Nebraska's. So they go ahead and lock up Dan Mullen, and now just the path is clear. If Scott Frost wants to return home, it's certainly on the table. You talk about weird press conferences. Bill Moose, the new AD at Nebraska, is maybe the only AD I've ever seen who just openly talks about the candidates and flat out says, oh yeah, we're very interested in Scott Frost. He's a great coach. We are being sensitive to the fact that his season is still going. And I'm thinking, Scott Frost is back there in Florida going, why are you talking about this? I've got a championship game to get ready for. I just, you know, there's been a lot of sentiment that might stay at UCF. I don't know how you don't, you know, how often is this job going to come open?
Exactly. The last thing I want to ask you about is Kevin Sumlin's out at Texas A&M. All signs are pointing towards Scott Woodward, the AD there, and former LSU athletic official who knows Jimbo Fisher really well from their time together in Baton Rouge, making a huge financial run at Jimbo Fisher. What do you think Jimbo Fisher is going to do, and what would happen? What do you think their Texas A&M does if he doesn't end up there?
I have no idea what Jimbo Fisher is going to do. There's too much smoke there to think this isn't a strong possibility. I don't think it would be out there if they didn't think he was interested. But then LSU sure thought they were going to get him the last couple of years, and he turned them down. So, you know, obviously things have changed. It's been a disaster of a season there. He's under pressure to fire some of his coaches, and maybe he just feels like it's time for a career reboot and a new place. I know he is long, you know, he just has such an affinity for the SEC, and it always seemed like maybe he'd want to end up back there. By the way, Max Olson did this research. Do you know who the last coach was who left a school where he won a national championship to take another college job?
You know, I should know this because I actually saw the tweet. It's something that happened like 4 years ago, right?
Yeah, it was Johnny Majors leaving Pitt to go to Tennessee. And I actually happened to have researched that recently, and I don't remember why, maybe for a mailbag answer. This is crazy. Imagine this happening today. Not only did Johnny Majors leave that job, by the way, this is wasn't where like Jimbo Fisher is a few years removed from it. They won the national championship that year, 1976, with, as a GA, who?
No, I know. The best hair in TV, Dave Wannstedt.
Yes. But he took the job before the bowl game. He took the job, and then they played in a bowl game and won the national championship.
Word around the Fox green room, Stu, is Majors actually took that job and abandoned a national title team just to get away from Wannstedt.
Probably, nah, that can't be. He's so charming. By the way, give a quick shout out to my former employer, your friends there. They had the Ohio State Michigan game for the first time, Gus and Joel and Jenny Taft, and I thought they did a fantastic job. It was a great call and befitting of the moment. So hats off to our friends there, Gus, Joel, Jenny, and everybody involved with that.
My shout out of the week, Stu.
Yeah, that was my shout out.
Yeah, my shout out of the week is to Vita Vea. He is the 6'4", 340-pound defensive tackle, defensive lineman for Washington. I have done games. I've had Ohio State twice in person. I've had Michigan. I've had Oklahoma. I ain't seen nothing in person like Vita Vea played the other night. He is an absolute beast. And when he wants to play like that, I mean, there's not a better defensive lineman or anything like him in college football. I mean, he was eating up double teams and he was just ragdolling guys. I mean, to see it in person, I was like, my God. And then the more it happened, the more he kept on just going off. And crazy is, you know, everyone, Hercules Madoff was a great player. He'll probably be the Pac-12 defensive player of the year. But Washington State is small on their D-line, on their defense. They're not small on their O-line. And just to see it, I'm not sure I've seen a player who was more impressive than what I this season than what I saw from big number 50 for Washington. So that's it for me.
Yeah, that's a strong statement. It's interesting. We know college football teams change from week to week. When I saw Washington only a couple weeks ago against Stanford, they weren't impressive at all. And then you see them just run Washington State off the field, which, by the way, has got to be, you know, a little bit galling at this point to Washington State fans. They keep getting blown out in the Apple Cup to Chris Peterson's teams. We got a little sidetracked. We were still talking about Jimbo Fisher and A&M. I don't know if he's going to take the job or not. And you asked me, if he doesn't take the job, who do they go for? You know, it's interesting is even though this has been a possibility, a strong possibility for a year, that they would have a coaching opening now. Is there necessarily a no-brainer plan B?
I don't think there is. Now, I had heard maybe they would consider Gary Kubiak, who won a Super Bowl in the NFL as a head coach and is a former Aggie with big ties there. The other name somebody had mentioned to me there was Kyle Whittingham, because the president of the school was very fond of him. He'd come from Utah. Kyle Whittingham's never been anywhere near the SEC. I don't know how that would work. We both think, I know, that he's a terrific coach. I just don't know if he would do it. I don't know how comfortable they are. But
how about they just trade and get Todd Graham?
Yeah, I don't know if everybody in Texas would feel the same way about them that apparently the ASU fans we've talked to feel about them.
Is Chad Morris ready for that A&M job?
I mean, I think he's a good coach and did a really good job at Clemson. I don't know how they would hire Chad Morris. I mean, I don't know what his record overall in 3 years in the AAC is, like 10-15 or 10-17 or something like that. I know he took over a bad situation, but at 7-5 in the AAC, I know he's a proud Texas high school coach and he went there. That to me would be a big gamble to throw him in against Nick Saban and all those other guys in the SEC.
Yeah, I would agree. And so I hope Scott Woodward has a good plan B in mind, because now it's one of these situations, and not quite the John Gruden situation because that was just pure fiction, but where it's everybody at A&M's all got their hopes up about Jimbo, and if he doesn't come through, now you got to come up with somebody that they're going to not feel is a complete – that is such a big downfall that they're going to riot the way Tennessee fans did. So, Bruce, somehow we got to this point of the podcast without mentioning the name Chip Kelly.
I know. Give me the grade on a scale of 1 to 10, what you give it.
A++. I mean, I don't care
– and that's A through Z.
I don't care what happens from here. UCLA won the coaching carousel. I think you and I both suspected he was more likely to end up at a place like UCLA than a place like Florida, but nevertheless, I mean, what a coup for a program that has frankly been irrelevant in football for going on 20 years now. And as I wrote, I think this is a really, really big deal for the Pac-12. I mean, you know, you look at the Pac-12 this year, and all the headlines are about late kickoff times, and, I mean, that Washington-Stanford game got preempted for a truck race. It's not, you know, and they're basically out. We did a whole playoff discussion, never mentioned USC or Stanford because it's just not going to happen. So that conference needs a jolt of something. And, you know, when Chip was in it the first time, everybody watched Oregon games. You wanted to watch Oregon games because they were so fun to watch. And look, I don't know if he'll be able to do that immediately. Obviously, UCLA's got problems that he's going to need to address. Maybe you know better than me who his likely quarterback is going to be. It's not going to be Josh Rosen. So,
I mean,
it'll happen. It'll happen quickly.
Is pretty good. I know they have a really talented freshman or high school kid committed there from Vegas who would fit what Chip does. I think recruiting will go very well for him. So I would predict pretty comfortably that that's going to happen. But you know, we'll see. I mean, I agree with you. I think this is an A++ hire. I mean, to me, this is the one home run hire somebody is making this winter. But it's good. I think it's ultimately it's good for college football to have him back in there because he's such an innovator. And I certainly think it's good for the Pac-12 for everything you just said.
All right, one more real quick. How do you feel about Ole Miss giving the job to Matt Luke?
Well, we know he desperately wants it. You know, we'll see what happens with the NCAA sanctions. I'm not sure how many guys they were going to get who I think would have been better fits there. You know, I think he did a really nice job this year, given all the distractions. They lost Shea Patterson almost midway through the year, and they responded well. Look, they took it to Mississippi State, their arch rival, and I think based on that, you know, we'll see. I mean, I don't know if they were in position to make any home run hires given their situation with the NCAA anyway. So I thought it was a decent move.
Yeah, and you know, the Egg Bowl I think changed it because that was such an important game for them. The fans so wanted to get Mississippi State for their role in turning them in for the sanctions, and so he gets the win. Jason Kersey was there for us and wrote a really good story that night about Matt Luke and the emotions of you know, a lot of people there felt he should get the job, and I read it and I enjoyed it, and I thought, I don't think there's much of a chance there. Like, why would they promote the interim coach who just went 6-6? But like you said, because of the threat of the sanctions, I don't know that there was an obvious home run guy that was going to come in there. I mean, frankly, these SEC schools now, I mean, there's so many openings. You're getting to the point of who's left. I looked at a list that the Clarion Ledger did of Mississippi State candidates to replace Mullen. And, you know, there were good mid-major coaches on that list. Obviously, Bill Clark has done phenomenal work at UAB getting that program back up and running. They mentioned Neil Brown from Troy. But, I mean, we're now many, many rungs down the ladder from Chip Kelly, Dan Mullen, Scott Frost, and so on.
That is right. Well, look, Stu, there's going to be more stuff that's going to happen this week. We appreciate you guys, as always, listening. Next week, hopefully, we'll get to some of your questions in the mailbag.
Next week, we'll have a playoff field to talk about. How about that? And roll those credits. If you enjoy The Audible, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get podcasts. If you enjoy college football podcasts, also subscribe to The All-American Podcast with Nicole Auerbach, Max Olson, and Chantel Jennings. Our producer is Nick Fink. Our intro song is Dangerous by Kevin and the Octaves. Download their music on iTunes and Spotify. Follow Bruce on Twitter at BruceFeldmanCFB. Follow me, Stu, at SL Mandel. And subscribe to The All-American if you haven't done so already at theathletic.com/All-American. So come on.